Real Seekers. I'm your host, Dale the Real Seeker. So next week, I'll be back to kind of my usual thing. I'm have another fourth episode of the Theo Geeks podcast with David Russell. We're going to be continuing on his topic of studying the book of Genesis. So we'll be getting into Genesis chapter 2. So I'll have a full show for you guys next week. And this is just going to be a very short bonus type podcast this week. I did a debate with T-Jump on the ontological argument, and I thought it went pretty good. I'd probably give myself like a B, just grade-wise. So that's a step up. I gave myself kind of a C-minus in the first discussion. So I think I did a little bit better this time around. However, that's not the consensus view. Once again, the Fundy Lace skeptics on T-Jump's boards and all that, and on the SNS boards are all cutting me up, saying I did a horrible job, and essentially utilizing T-Jump's argumentation, thinking that he actually refutes the scholarship when he does not. But nonetheless, look, they think T-Jump did a good job. And what T-Jump did is he presented a couple of parodies on the show. So originally, I wanted to do a full-on review of the show, plus continue on with my review from our first talk, continuing on with the argument from Beauty and the Shroud of Turin and what T-Jump said there, because I don't think he really gave substantive objections to either of those. And so I wanted to give a more thoughtful take rather than just speaking off the cuff. I don't have rhetorical wit like people like T-Jump or David Johnson have, but what I bring is substance when I really think about thing, and I give substantive points, whereas atheists and skeptics tend not to do so, unless you're dealing with a scholar like Dr. Graham Opie or something like that, someone who knows what they're actually talking about. So with that said, yeah, that will have to wait because I don't have time. I got hired for a new job. So I'm TAing for another class in addition to all my other workload. It's reading week, so I've got a bunch of work to do this week. But I did want to give you guys something. I did want to at least respond to the main thing in our ontological debate, which was those two parodies that T-Jump gave. Because, just looking at some of the boards, I'm baffled at how the skeptics are so foolish and ignorant. They think that T-Jump made good points. And I don't mean this as an insult. I'm finished with that, but I truly am baffled. So you get people like Dave Schellenberger, for example, on T-Jump's boards, who's quote-unquote, imagine being a Christian, coming to a bait, and having Tom throw you way off with a magical pineapple. Hail the magical pineapple. So the magical pineapple was one of his parodies. Wow. that's crazy. And you have another one of these foolish listeners of T-Jump. So Lester Jester says, oh man, when Tom included logical contradictions into the definition of a maximally great being, he broke Dale's brain. Priceless. Man, what a fool that guy is. What a utter fool. How dumb can you be? So he's referring to T-Jump's Necessary Square Circle parody. And that's logically contradictory. And beloved Lester here is so foolish that he thinks that he actually beat me with a logically contradictory concept. So this is the quality of the lay atheist or skeptic. They're just clueless, and it's just crazy. But rather than just insulting commenters that don't know what they're talking about, I did want to respond substantively, at least to T-Jump's two parodies as presented in the show, and give my take on that. So with that said, let's actually provide a couple of clips where T-Jump himself, in his own words, in full context, is giving these parodies. And then I'll come back and respond to them. Oh, and just before I do that, actually, there was one other listener that had an interesting comment that just made no sense to me. So, Agnostic Naturalist says, quote-unquote, Dale was knocked out in the first few seconds. Right. Well done as always, T-Jump. His understanding of soundness is completely wrong. I think in the first part he was defining it as a presupposition, and then he lulls to himself. He laughs out loud. Okay, so I'm not sure what this skeptic is going on about. He's totally wrong and foolish. and can be simply dismissed as biased against me. So number one, I get paid $50 an hour to teach critical thinking. I know what logical soundness is. I teach it way better than this fool. So logical soundness is basically logical validity plus true premises. That's the definition. Oxford University agrees. Everyone with a PhD agrees. I'm right. You're wrong. Now, in the debate, I did combine soundness technically with what's called deductive strength, because, you know, in order to be true, there's also this aspect and are we justified? How can we prove on a balance of probabilities that each of these premises are true? So I did kind of conflate that, and try to involve both aspects, soundness and deductive strength, so that the audience would understand what we were trying to do in the process. That's not a presupposition. I have no clue what this skeptic is going on about. It's laughable. I lolled when I saw this. I'm right. He's wrong. I know what I'm talking about. This guy doesn't. So yeah, everyone in the entire world, atheist, agnostic, will agree with me. I define logical soundness correctly. So I did want to add in that. But that's it for my angry ranting at the skeptics in the audience. It's just frustrating to see when you put in the hard effort and research what the actual scholars are saying, and you present that on a show, and just because somebody's better rhetorically than you are, you can bamboozle so many people into thinking you're making great points and your opponent is doing a bad job when you are the one that's actually kicking intellectual butt and they're just a flop. So that's a bit frustrating, but it is what it is. So with that said, let's get into the substantive point of this video. Okay, so the first thing to understand is my argument proper as I presented it. So again, it was a five-premise argument, deductive argument. So premise one, it is metaphysically possible that a real, maximally great being, aka God, exists. Premise two, if it is possible that a real, maximally great being exists, then a real, maximally great being exists in some possible world. Premise three, if a real, maximally great being exists in some possible world, then it exists in every possible world. And if a real maximum great being exists in every possible world, then it exists in the actual world. Finally, premise five, if a real maximum great being exists in the actual world, then a real maximum great being exists. Conclusion, therefore, a real maximum great being exists, i.e. God exists, and that proves it. Absolute proof. So let's focus first, what is a real maximum great being? Well, I defined it arbitrarily, for the sake of argument, defined it as a being that has the maximally consistent or compossible set of power, knowledge, and benevolence. And that was just a minimal definition. It can have other properties all the way up to the attributes of the Christian God, but you would need to do the work. In this argument, I just wanted to focus on those three properties, benevolence, knowledge, and power, and say that I can prove there's a being that has the maximally consistent or maximal possible set or compossible set of those three properties, plus metaphysical necessity. So it exists out of necessity of its own nature. It's a metaphysically necessary being, plus it's got these the maximal consistent set of power, knowledge, and benevolence, minimally. It might have other properties to the maximal consistent set as well. But our argument isn't attempting to argue that. It's just got those three properties to the maximal consistent set plus metaphysical necessity. So four properties is our definition of the real maximally great being. Now, as I mentioned in the show, there are two, it has to be a valid argument. It can't commit any logical or informal or formal logical fallacies, and therefore it would be valid proper. And it has to be logically sound. The premises have to be true. And I added in the deductive strength part, where we have to be justified or warranted in accepting each of the premises as probably being true or proven to be true in a warranted way. And that's key for understanding the parodies argument, that deductive strength aspect. Okay, so it's important to note in the show, at the very least in the show and elsewhere, T-Jump has fully admitted this, my argument is logically valid. So success, absolute success there. We don't need to care. By the way, I also conceded that his two parody arguments were also valid. So basically, T-Jump's parodies in the show that we did on the ontological argument, in our debate at least, were swap out the it is poss in premise one, swap out it is possible that a real maximally great being, as I defined it, is possible, and instead swap in his magical pineapple, which he defined. There was a bit of back and forth. He kind of was vague and equivocating. He wouldn't explain what it was properly outright. So I had to kind of investigate, well, what are this magical pineapple's properties? What is it exactly? But in the end, we settled upon, it's basically a quasi-great being. T-Jump didn't like that, but that's exactly what the scholars would say it is, because it's the same as a real magical pineapple is just a label, semantic label, that's defined as the, everything, all the properties that a real maximally great being has. So it's got the maximally consistent set of power, benevolence, and, whoops, minus knowledge. He subtracts consciousness or knowledge. So the magical pineapple, and it's metaphysically necessary as well. So the magical pineapple, minimally, has three properties. It's got the maximally consistent set of power and benevolence, and or whatever else you can add on. It's a minimal definition, so whatever else the real maximally great being might be. Plus metaphysical necessity, so it's necessary in its existence, just like I've arbitrarily defined my real maximally great being to be. Minus consciousness. So that's what scholars call a quasi-great being. It's by definition a quasi-great being. T-Jump didn't like the label, but he just doesn't understand the scholarship. Because whenever you have a real maximally great being minus a property, that's a quasi-great being by definition. That's just what the scholars call it. Or if you subtract a degree, a better argument, his magical pineapple just was unconscious, had no knowledge at all. But other people, quasi-great beings, they have knowledge. They have all knowledge except they don't know all future tense propositions. And there's, in the show, I mentioned that God doesn't have future, doesn't know the truth of future propositions on an A theory of time. That doesn't mean to say I'm a Molinist. He has middle knowledge. He knows all future tense propositions. That's how he knows the future, gives prophets predictions and stuff like that. What I was more saying is God can't know the proposition that it's true that today is Sunday, March 8th. No, it's Saturday, October. Today is Saturday, October 9th. If God knew that today is March 10th, well, that would be false. That would be wrong. That would be an imperfection of God. So that's what I was saying. I'm not saying God doesn't know the future. Of course he does. He's omniscient. He knows all future tense, the truth of all future tense, true propositions, but he doesn't know propositions that aren't true today, that would be logically impossible to be true on an A theory of time. So that's a distinction there. But nonetheless, someone could conceive of God having all knowledge, but he doesn't know minus future tense propositions. He doesn't know those, even though those are logically possible. Or maybe he doesn't know my birthday or something like that. So it's a real maximum great being minus some diminishment, either of the degree of a property or what T-Jump did, just subtracting one of the properties, one or more of the properties altogether. In this case, T-Jump's magical pineapple just has no consciousness, therefore it has a zero degree of knowledge. By definition, that's a quasi-great being parody that tries to cancel out. It's okay, so now T-Jump's, and I admit that's a valid argument. His definition fits in, and it can be logically valid. It's the same structure as my argument. His second one was, okay, well, let's plug in a necessary square circle. So it's a square circle, and it exists out of metaphysical necessity. And then he plugs that in into the argument and gets the same result. Again, it's a logically valid argument. He's just using my argument and just swapping out a real maximum great being and plugging in magical pineapple or plugging in a necessary square circle. I'm not going to deny that, at least in terms of validity at all. Okay, so I hope that you kind of understand that. So that means when you have a parody, the way parody arguments work is they provide an argument with a parallel structure. So it's the exact same argument that T-Jump's using, But it leads to an absurd conclusion. Obviously, a magical pineapple is absurd. T-Jump doesn't believe in it. Nobody believes in it. You're a fool if you actually believe there's a magical pineapple as T-Jump has defined it out there. Secondly, a necessary square circle. Nobody believes in that. That's, you're foolish. It's an absurd conclusion, at least in T-Jump's mind, because he's using it as a parody, right? To try and refute it, right? So parodies work in two ways. Either they show that the original argument is logically invalid in some way. That can't be the case because T-Jump conceded your argument's valid in the debate. So really what T-Jump's parody arguments are designed to do, along with what most of them try to do, is say that my argument's unsound in some way. One or more of my premises are untrue. And it ultimately comes down to the first premise, because everyone admits premises 2 through 5, virtually everyone. 2 through 5 are true, and at least in terms of the parodies, I understood T-Jump to be saying, yeah, I can grant those, but your first premise is false, because I've got these parodies that work just as well. And that's the problem here, is remember deductive strength. When we're comparing, okay, is it possible, premise one, is it possible for a real maximally great being to exist? I provided 3 ways to approach that. So in the first way, we have just a priori, modal evaluating faculty produced properly basic beliefs and conceptions. And this proves that, yeah, my being is possible. Whereas I have no conception of a magical pineapple or a necessary square circle. I can't even conceive of that. A priori, those are just impossible to exist. Now, again, in the debate, I knew T-Jump would do this. He would just flip it and say, no, I can conceive of the magic pineapple. I can't conceive of your real maximally great being. I tried to say that actually, no, you can conceive of it. But whatever, I knew that would be a stalemate. Secondly, I gave several evidences or arguments from some of the top scholars in the world proving that this being must be conscious or omniscient, therefore refuting his magical pineapple. Jerome Gelman, I linked to his paper, proving that there must be one omnipotent being. So you're kind of proving from the bottom up each of the properties of my real maximally great being. And in so doing, this refutes. You have reason to say that, well, a magical pineapple is impossible. A necessary square circle is impossible, therefore, and the real maximally great being, yeah, that's preserved, proven from the bottom up to be possible at least. And therefore, my argument wins, T-Jump's parodies are false. And the reason we're doing this is because in order to a parody argument to defeat an original argument, you have to prove that your premises are equally justifiable or equally warranted. Remember, deductive strength to be true. They're just as probably true as my original modal ontological arguments, premises. And my premise one, my possibility premise, has been proven to be more plausibly true than T-Jump's parodies, and he fails for that reason. So, as I said, I gave those 2 reasons. But in the debate, I wanted to bypass all of that as much as possible and get into Dr. Eugene Nagasawa's top-down approach, because this basically proves that the possibility premise in my argument is 100% proven to be true. It's impossible for you to deny that it's true. You're an utter fool, ignorant fool, if you deny that this premise is true. It's true by definition. This is the amazing thing with Eugene Nagasawa's argument. And let me just pop him up here and read him in his own words with his top-down approach. So, quote unquote, to develop a new argument for the possibility premise, just for you guys, if you want to, this is freely available on my blog. If you go to my blog site, it's one of the sources, I think it's like called Eugene One or something like that. But it's Eugene's book, Maximal God, on Perfect Being Theology. It's a great book, a great resource. He's done great work here. So please support him and that sort of thing and buy his book and that. But otherwise, I'm reading here from the top of page 204. Again, that source is freely available for you guys. I want to share knowledge as much as possible. So please check it out and read into this in further details. But here's the relevant part that I want to develop a new argument for the possibility premise, I suggest we adopt a top-down instead of a bottom-up perspective. That is, instead of starting with the building blocks of God's greatness as incremental units of knowledge, power, and benevolence, or even omniscience, omnipotence, and omnibenevolence, we should rather start with God's greatness itself. The maximal God thesis explicates the perfect being thesis by saying that God is the being that simply has the maximally consistent set of knowledge, power, and benevolence. Again, minimally, I'll add in that qualifier because he has other properties too. Anyways, quoting on, according to the maximal God approach, top-down approach, this is what the perfect being thesis means when it says God is, by definition, the being which has no greater is metaphysically possible. This suggests that we can automatically derive that it is possible that God exists, because here God is simply defined or understood as the being that has whatever the maximal consistent set of knowledge, power, and benevolence is. In other words, the maximal concept of God is, by definition, internally coherent, because its components are mutually consistent. This guarantees the possibility of the existence of this real maximally great being or God. That is, the possibility of God's existence comes for free, as a given, so defined. Going on, he says, recall that Plantinga's formulation of the modal ontological argument appeals to the following two theses. Number one, maximally excellent being is one that necessarily a being is maximally excellent in a given possible world only if it is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent in that world. Maximal greatness, or a maximally great being, is one that necessarily a being that is maximally great only if it is maximally excellent in every possible world. In other words, it's omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent in every single possible world, and or is metaphysically necessary. What Eugen has argued above here is, quote unquote, what I have argued above suggests that these theses should be replaced with the following theses. Call them real maximal excellence and real maximal greatness, respectively, whereby real maximal excellence entails necessarily a being is really maximally excellent in a given possible world only if it has the maximally consistent set of knowledge, power, and benevolence in that world. Secondly, a real maximally great being is one that necessarily a being that is really maximally excellent in every possible world. In other words, has the maximally consistent set of knowledge, power, and benevolence plus is metaphysically necessary. Now this, once we accept that the real maximally excellence thesis and the real maximally greatness thesis can apply to God, then the consistency between God's knowledge, power, and benevolence is a given, and there is no need, zero need, to provide an additional argument for the possibility premise. The possibility premise is simply true by definition. You are a fool if you say that it's not, my premise one is not true. Impossible, 100% justification, or epistemic warrant. It's true by definition. You cannot deny it, because he's just defined as, well, whatever is the maximal possible set of these things. You can have omniscience to the 8 out of 10 degree, omnipotence to the 9 out of 10 degree, and benevolence to the 7 out of 10 degree. Let's pretend that's the maximally consistent set you can have for the degrees of each of these properties, just for the sake of argument, just making stuff up. Okay, well then that's what God has. That's what this being, this real maximally great being, is defined to have, and it has it in every single possible world. It is metaphysically necessary in addition to those three properties in those possible degrees. So, you know, T-Jump was trying to give omniscience paradoxes, omnipotence paradoxes. These were totally beside the point and irrelevant to Eugen's argumentation. Number one, T-Jump's wrong. I looked into them. These paradoxes are easily defeated. They're not actual contradictions, and it's God can be omniscient in the sense he knows all, he grounds all true propositions. That's not a problem. Even a potentially infinite amount of propositions, so that resolves it. Can God, omnipotence paradox, can God lift a rock? The answer is no, because that he has the power to do everything that's logically possible. No philosopher in the world thinks that's a problem. You're foolish if you think that that's an objection to God's existence. But even still, pretend those paradoxes succeed and, oh shoot, I guess there are certain things God can't know or something like that, because it's paradoxical or contradictory, logically contradictory for him to know these things, great, who cares? This argument is very restricted and minimal. It's only arguing for whatever it is possible for him to know, then that's what he knows. He knows all of that to the maximal possible degree and a consistent set. So maybe he knows 8 out of 10 propositions or something like that, and that's the maximal amount that it's possible or compossible for a being to know. Likewise with omnipotence, maybe 9 out of 10, if you want to give it a number figure. Okay, it's only logically possible for someone's power degree to be up to 9 out of 10. It can't be all the way up to 10 out of 10. Who cares? For the sake of argument, whatever that maximally consistent set is in terms of the degrees of each of these three properties, there's a being that has it. That's possible. It's possible that there's a being that has that set, because by definition, they are that's the logically compossible set of them. So I think that's getting, I hope that is coming through. Look, this premise, 100% proven true. My possibility premise, it is 100% true by definition that it is possible that a real, maximally great being exists. You cannot deny it. Now, that said, I'm going to immediately contradict myself, because actually you can deny that it's 100% proven. How? So you can appeal to a parody that T-Jump didn't. You could appeal to a maximal evil being. So he's got he's a really maximally evil being. He's got the maximal consistent set of power, knowledge, and the opposite of benevolence, of malevolence or something like that, or evilness or whatever. You want to say, and when I do my ontological argument solo show, that's what I think is the most devastating parody argument, because then it's, you have to decide, well, what is, this is true by definition too, for the maximally real, maximally evil being as well. So obviously these are canceling out parodies, and you have to come up with some kind of asymmetry in meeting the evil god challenge. You have to say, well, these concepts, the really maximal evil being and the really maximal great being, are not symmetrical. There's an asymmetry in favor of the really maximally great being, and therefore benevolence is the one we favor, not malevolence. I'm not going to do that in this show because T-Jump didn't bring that up in our debate, but when I do my solo show in detail on the ontological argument, obviously I'm going to be dealing with that. I mean, I'm writing my thesis on the evil god challenge, so there are several ways to defeat the atheist if he wants to go that route. Fortunately for me, T-Jump didn't do that. So, great. So we've got 100% proven true. So, great. What about premise one, the possibility premise with T-Jump's parodies? How do they compare? Are they also 100%? In order to be equal, you can't be more plausibly true than 100%. So they would have to be 100% proven true that it's possible for a magical pineapple to exist and or for a necessary square circle to exist in order for his parodies to defeat the modal ontological argument as I've given it using Eugene Nagasawa's top-down approach. So how does T-Jump fare here? Well, let's start with his extremely weak parody of the necessary square circle. So, great, so this square circle has the property of being metaphysically necessary. That just means, by definition, it exists in every possible world. Great, Grin and Groovy, I'm with you so far. I've done the same thing. I've just artificially defined a real maximally great being as having the property of metaphysical necessity. Cool, through the argument, if that's possible, well, then that proves that it in fact exists. This is axiom S5 modal logic and or axiom S4. So there's a controversy between axiom S5 and axiom S4. So if you don't like axiom S5, fine. You can have axiom S4 plus axiom B. Gets you the same thing. If something is possibly necessary, it is necessary. It does exist necessarily. And this is just, virtually no one will deny this. This is just common sense, and it's an axiom in modal logic that virtually everyone finds not to be an issue. So anyways, outside of the modal logic thing, we're just, again, T-Jump didn't object to axiom S5, so okay, a square circle, oh my goodness, how does to the atheists and skeptics on a lay level think that this refutes the modal ontological argument? a square circle, I hate to break it to you guys, it's there's this thing called the logical law of non-contradiction. And you see, if something's a square and it's a circle, they are by definition contradictory. They violate the logical law of non-contradiction. It is logically impossible for this thing to exist. Don't be such a fool. Oh my goodness. Atheists are foolish on a lay level. A square circle, impossible to exist. You can't conceive it. I'm right, you're wrong. 0% probability that the necessary square circle being plugged into the modal ontological argument is possible. It is metaphysically impossible and logically impossible. Given that the laws of logic, including the logical law of non-contradiction, is true, it can't. It is impossible that a square circle exists because it violates the laws of logic. Essentially, you're saying there's a possible world where the laws of logic, like the logical law of non-contradiction, are true, and also in that world, the logical law of non-contradiction and the laws of logic are false. Sorry, this is ridiculous. You cannot posit a logically impossible thing. So this possibility premise for the necessary square circle, 0% probability that that premise is true. This is just obvious. If you deny it, you're not interested in truth. You're lying, you're a deceiver, you're using rhetorical tricks, you don't care about the truth, and you can be simply dismissed as a fool. Everyone in the entire world, whether they're atheists or not, anyone would agree with me. I'm right, you're wrong, T-Jump. This failed. This does not refute the modal ontological argument. You cannot posit logically contradictory things and pretend that those are logically possible. No, contradictory things are logically impossible. Enough said. This should destroy you as an atheist if you think this is a good parody. So let's move on to the more substantive one, this quasi-great being that T-Jump gives the semantic label of magical pineapple. This is a little bit better, right? Because it supposes everything that I suppose about my real maximally great being. He's got maximally consistent set of power, maximally consistent set of benevolence, let's say. I'm not sure how that would work for a non-personal being, but, you know, like an unconscious thing, isn't a moral agent. So there could be quibbles about that, but nonetheless, I just granted him that. He's just trying to say, well, look, it's minus knowledge. This thing is everything you want to say that's maximally consistent, but it lacks consciousness or personhood or all knowledge. It has no knowledge whatsoever. This is the property. And in the show, I kind of tackled this and said, well, there is knowledge in the world. You agree with that? And he's like, yep. And knowledge comes in degrees. So it makes sense to say some people have a higher degree of knowledge than others. He's, yep, cool. And then I said, well, we as human beings have knowledge of logically necessary truths, like 1 plus 1 equals 2. Virtually everyone in the entire world admits, yeah, that's a necessary truth. It's true in all logically possible worlds. In every world, the laws of logic are true. 1 plus 1 equals 2 is going to be true. It's impossible for that thing not to be true. So that truth is true in all possible worlds. Furthermore, T-Jump agreed with me. I gave my conceptual argument for the omniscience and or consciousness or maximally consistent set of knowledge as a property of the real maximally great being and or this magical pineapple. Why? Because something has to ground those necessary truths. And there are only two things that can ground propositions or numbers. You know, either they exist independently as abstract objects, kind of like what Plato thought about, that, you know, the number two is just floating around in some Platonic heaven and stuff like that. Or they exist as thoughts in minds. This is typically a divine conceptualist. So I would say it's in the mind of God, obviously. But nonetheless, not to beg the question at this point, in some mind, they can exist. Numbers and propositions like 1 plus 1 equals 2 can exist as thoughts in a mind. T-Jump agreed with me. It's ridiculous. He rules out numbers and stuff existing as abstract things independently. So great. He agreed with me. Yeah, they exist as thoughts in minds. Excellent. Well, here's the problem, T-Jump. Because 1 plus 1 equals 2 is a necessary truth, it is true and or exists in all possible worlds, logically possible worlds. But human brains right? So he tried to say, this mind has to be physical and it's invented by humans. These propositions emerge. No, because they're necessary. Necessarily true. There are worlds where 1 + 1 = 2, even without human beings or our physical brains, without any physical brains or minds at all. And how do we know this? Well, we don't even have to use our modal evaluating faculties. It's true in the actual world. Human beings weren't around for 4.5 billion years and or for 13 billion years, yet the universe operated according to 1 + 1 = 2 and mathematical laws, scientifically proven fact, by the way. It operated according to these necessary mathematical truths long before human physical brains ever showed up, even before it was even possible for a sentient or any kind of physical being or a carbon-based life form to exist at all. And yet the laws of mathematics and rules, propositions of mathematics were still necessarily true, and the universe was operating in accordance with them. So therefore you have to have a non-physical brain or mind, perhaps like God's, that grounds all of these necessary truths and propositions along with all the other propositions. Well, that therefore your pineapple is unconscious by definition. It has no knowledge by definition, so therefore your magical pineapple is implausible. That it's implausible to think that is possible relative to a real maximally great being that does have knowledge, to it defined as whatever the maximally consistent set is. It grounds as thoughts all of the necessary truths as well as all the other true propositions and as thoughts in its mind. Oh, the mind of God. This is a position known as divine conceptualism when we're looking at the attribute of God's aseity and that sort of thing. That makes perfect sense. That is way more plausibly true than positing a magical pineapple that has no knowledge, no concepts. Really, T-Jump fails simplicity here, because obviously there are these necessary truths, so how does he ground those? He would have to posit a second entity that is personal. You know, so there's this metaphysically necessary magical pineapple plus some other personal being out there that has an omniscient mind and grounds all the, or a maximally consistent set of knowledge in his mind. He grounds all the true propositions that it's logically possible to know or something like that. So that's less simple than a real maximum great being. Therefore, yeah, my real maximum great being is more possibility premise is more plausibly true. We are warranted in believing that over and against T-Jump's magical pineapple parody. Utter failure. That's less than 50% proven. I'd probably give it less than 5%. We just know that we're not warranted or justified in any way in thinking that a magical pineapple is T-Jump defines it is plausibly true. Nope. We don't have that problem when it comes to a real maximum great being. It covers all the problems with grounding knowledge and necessary truths. Additionally, there are other arguments that support that there has to be one being that grounds all of the knowledge and that sort of thing. Outside of this conceptual argument, we've got arguments from the cosmological argument. I gave 5 reasons in my cosmological argument solo show, part 5A, for proving that whatever caused the universe had to be personal and consciousness. This adds plausibility to the possibility premise for my real maximally great being. This doesn't support the possibility premise for a magical pineapple parody. Likewise, there are other arguments. J.P. Moreland, a world's expert in the philosophy of mind, has proven that God or a real maximally great being must exist and ground all knowledge through his argument from consciousness itself. This argument, if successful, makes it more plausibly true that my real maximally great being is possibly true versus that a magical pineapple is true, because no, that's not possibly true. It can't account for the argument from consciousness. So there's so many ways to refute lazy, skeptical parodies that atheists think are good, but they're just flops and fluff if you actually stop and think about it. And by the way, I hope I'm not cutting up. I don't mean to be hard on T-Jump. I actually kind of like him. He's got his style. He's definitely got a rhetorical style, but in general, he's a nice guy. So I'm not cutting him up. I'm just cutting up the arguments. I don't mean this. He's welcome on my show anytime. I'll go on his show anytime and have the same things. I enjoy talking to him, that sort of thing. And it's always interesting. It's always a challenge because he's got the rhetorical skills. I don't. And I bring the substance that he doesn't always have and that sort of thing. So it's a good mix, I think. All right, so I think with that said, that should cover it. Like I said, this is just going to be a short little response thing. It turned into longer than I was hoping it would be. But yeah, again, when we have a parody argument, talking the soundness and T-jumps were aimed at the first premise of my argument. He was trying to say, either your first premise is false and or you don't have, you're not, it's not deductively strong. You don't have justification or sufficient warrant to privilege the possibility of a real maximum grade being over and against a magical pineapple or over and against a necessary square circle. And indeed, T-Jump once had said, you can posit anything and they're all equally plausible. Well, I hope that I've shown that that's complete rubbish. In the first place, the necessary, my real maximum grade being, apart from issues relating to a maximal, really maximal evil parody, outside of that, it's 100% proven. I'm 100% warranted in believing the truth of that premise, relative to 0% plausibility for the necessary square circle. And I was trying to be generous to T-Jump, so I gave it about 5% for the magical pineapple. That's plausibly possible. No, it is not. It's and we're talking metaphysical possibility here, not just epistemic, as I explained in the show. So yeah, therefore I win. My modal ontological argument proving that a real maximally great being exists relative to Tom Jump's two parodies, utter failure. I win. Landslide, I win. It's ridiculous to think otherwise. So that's my take on that. So I hope you guys, I hope that makes sense. I hope you guys enjoyed the review. I know T-Jump's fans are not going to appreciate. I was a little going on a bit of a frustrated rant against them. Again, just trying to be playful. Look, I didn't, you guys were going after me in the comments. I let you guys get away with it. I didn't respond back in anger or anything like that. So this is just me giving my little take or something. And I want to add, because, you know, I was in the beginning, I kind of focused all on the bad comments, but it's not, it's been, pretty good, because some of T-Jump's fans in the audience are skeptical. They do think that I didn't do a good job in the debate. They think I lost, or that the ontological argument is a horrible debate, stuff like that. But from, I've debated T-Jump twice now, and I want to say that there are some atheists and skeptics who do approach and come to me and interact in good faith. They sure, they don't think I won, or they think I made a bad argument or something like that, or they disagree with me on something. But once you interact with them, you know, they're great. They're sincerely interested. They'll check out links. You know, I think his name, R.T. Riker from the first one, or Sutra Stevens. I forget, Heather was her first name, for example. And these were people that were kind of critical about my performance. But then once you interact with them, they are genuinely open. They, you know, they accept your links and they communicate, they're respectful and stuff like that. So I don't want you to give the misunderstanding that, oh, it's all bad, T-Jump's audience is horrible, and the SNS audience, skeptics, they're all a bunch of bad people. No, there are some good, there are some golden nuggets in there. There are some good skeptics that if you actually interact with them one-on-one, you know, they're interested, they're good, they give a good faith dialogue, and it's clear to me that they're sincerely interested in truth, even if they come back and say, okay, well, that's great, I understand your view, but I disagree, I think you're wrong. But yeah, it was more fun to kind of just sort of give a bit of a rant against the ones that are not that, the bad eggs, the bad ones. So on that front, I've got a few more comments of bad egg commenters from T-Jump's channel that I want to end the show on and have a little bit of fun, and I'll give a response to them here. So, all right, so the first one, so this was an interesting objection from a real agnotheist on T-Jump's YouTube channel, a version of the show, of the ontological debate I did with him. And Real over here says, quote unquote, love it when Christians object to the magic pineapple because it could be eaten. So he's referring to the fact that I gave an objection back when I was thinking, okay, well, what are the properties of this magical pineapple parody? I was saying, well, maybe it's contingent and not metaphysically necessary. So can it be eaten? And if he says yes, that proves it's contingent. There is a time where the laws of logic exist and this pineapple doesn't exist. Obviously, T-Jump just, to that, he realized he was wrong there and just kind of, oh, okay, on an ad hoc basis, it's metaphysically necessary, so it can't be eaten. It can't cease to exist at any time. Okay, great. But this is what this skeptic is responding to here. So, yeah, love it when Christians object to the magic pineapple because it could be eaten. Hello, what the flip? He had a different word in mind, I'm sure. Is communion, you idiot. This is my body. This is my blood. You're eating your God, for flip's sakes. Well, this genius of a skeptic, of a fundy-lay skeptic who's just biased, maybe don't realize, hello, moron, sorry, hello, real, there's different denominations, perhaps? Did you think of that? Do you understand that there are different views? Not everyone's a Catholic? Not everyone believes they're actually eating God? Did you think of that? No. Okay, seriously speaking, so real, the answer is, look, I'm a Baptist, I'm a Protestant, I don't believe I'm actually eating God. That runs into the same problems that I would run into. That's why I don't believe in transfiguration, or transubstantiation. As a Protestant, I think it's communion service is symbolic, mostly, and or that there's a Reformed view would be that there's the spiritual presence of God when we take part in the symbolic memorial service of communion service. So that's what I would say there as a serious answer to your objection. Without making fun of you, I do think that this is an interesting objection that you give. It is something that definitely Catholics should probably have to think about. But if you understand the doctrine of what transubstantiation is actually saying, they don't technically have that problem either. They understand the difference between essential or accidental properties of, you know, the bread is being eaten, but that doesn't mean that Jesus is being used up or something. So they would also have comebacks, just to be fair to that. So yeah, that's his objection. Okay, then we get another one. JCJC from T-Jumps. Lol, what the heck, Dale? He uses a different word. Every single argument you made for the better part of 30 minutes has been shot down. Wrong. But, he continues, and you come back with, well, I think Tom has conceded defeat. Lol, what an idiot. JCJC. Basically, what I was referring to at that part is because I had trapped, this was where I was responding to the magical pineapple. I finally sunk in that, okay, it's a quasi-great being. T-Jump is just defining this as real, maximally great being minus consciousness or minus knowledge. And I felt he had conceded defeat when he gave me, look, there are these necessary truths, 1 + 1 = 2, stuff like that. They exist in every possible world because they're necessary. And his pineapple is not conscious or has no knowledge. And that he admits there can't be abstract objects existing independently, so numbers and propositions have to exist in a mind as thoughts. Once he granted these three things, then to my mind, this was him conceding defeat. This is what I was talking about, because that makes it more plausibly true that there's a real maximally great being, one that has consciousness and knowledge is needed to ground these necessary truths. So that's what I was kind of meaning when I said that. He had conceded defeat and just didn't know it. My arguments were not shot down. In fact, I destroyed T-Jump using his own concessions to me. I will say that I wish I connected the dots a bit better and made it clearer for the audience as to what I was doing, what in context, why, how do these objections relate to the deductive strength of my possibility premise and my argument for the real maximum great being versus T-Jump's parody for the magical pineapple. And what I was trying to show is that, well, given this argument alone, it is much more plausibly true or justified or warranted, whatever word you want to say, that my possibility premise is probably true, whereas the magical pineapple possibility premise in the parody argument is just laughably false. It can't account for knowledge and for these necessary truths. So that's what I had in mind there on a serious answer to your question. But yeah, I love being called an idiot. Here I am, an academic in a master's program, getting A's and A pluses and stuff like that, and teaching critical thinking, getting paid money to teach first-year university students. I don't like to brag, but it's almost like with hard-nosed skeptics, you have to come at them overly bombastic just to be heard, just to be taken seriously, and it's ridiculous. That's the way it feels sometimes. But yeah, it's calling me an idiot. Maybe you disagree with me, but the ad hominems just make you look stupid, in my opinion. Whether you are or not, it's just one comment. But yeah, try to present yourself a little bit better, a little bit more mature and sophisticated when you're critiquing those you disagree with. I would say JC, JC. All right, the last one. This guy's got a bunch of commenters with him. I can't even... Dutch Rugby Kiwi banned by Ray Comfort on Twitter. So he was banned by Ray Comfort. So I guess we know what kind of skeptic we're dealing with here. But he says, Dale is not an honest interlocutor. I'm a liar. He doesn't acknowledge when his argument has been dismantled, just says, gotcha, and moves on to his next point. He got wrecked by Tom. And then his little buddies comment after, Robert Saget, yeah, it was pretty frustrating seeing him constantly change the subject when he was cornered, never conceding a point, but more just trying to quickly change the subject. And then Pissteak says under that, no such thing as an honest apologetic, period. And then they drop their mic like a fool that they are. Anyways, okay, so responding seriously and not giving them a dose of their own. So I would say this. So I take great issue with people calling me dishonest. It seems to be a tactic, a rhetorical tactic of skeptics. It's like they go to school and learn this stupid little insult, and they call everyone dishonest, and then when you call them on it, are you saying, I don't really believe this? You're calling me a liar? Oh, no, I don't mean dishonest in the sense that the English dictionary defines it, and everyone understands it to mean, I mean something else, like it's not true or some nonsense like that. No, dishonest means you're calling me a liar. And I take great issue with that because I am extremely honest. I don't get, my income doesn't depend on my Christianity or my faith. In fact, my income is threatened by, has been actually threatened in some cases. I've had people, stalkers, go after me and try to get me fired from my job because of my religious beliefs. And thank goodness the university I go to, it stands up to that and stands up for people's rights. Look, we have freedom of expression and we respect each other. My university, I've been greatly humbled and appreciative of the fact that, look, we have people of all different views, and just like what me and T-Jump do, we can discuss these issues mutually respect in a mutually respectful way. And yeah, we can have things we disagree with. Some things I think are wrong, morally wrong, that they believe, and vice versa. But it's an open atmosphere, and I really am appreciative of that. But look, I've put myself in positions. I've went on David Smalley's show in front of millions of people, or however, hundreds of thousands of people or something, and argued that what Abraham did in sacrificing Isaac was good, for example, or was the right, morally right thing to do. That put me in a hugely precarious position, but I had the guts to stand up for my beliefs and say, dang the consequences, this is what I believe, and I want, here's my reasons why. I want you to engage with it. I want you to understand why I think that this is the proper answer to give. You know, I've had people attacking my friends and contacts because of my answers to various controversial questions, let's say. So no, I'm not dishonest in any way. I resent that accusation because I stand up for what's honest, for what I honestly believe at all times. I'm not going to say I'm a liar. Everyone's a liar at times. But when it comes to what I'm presenting in a podcast, I really do my absolute best to say what I believe, because these are important. If I'm caught out as a hypocrite or a lie in some of the doctrines that I'm teaching, then that will have huge implications. That backfires. I mean, look at Rabbi Zacharias. That it causes, the cost is just too great to even consider lying about that. So I would never lie about what I believe. I may say things wrong, and sometimes I've done that, or corrected myself. There have been times I've changed my beliefs. So one time I said one thing, at another later time I've said another, because I've genuinely changed my beliefs. But I never lie. I'm always honest, and I'm a good faith dialoguer. I don't use tactics, unlike T-Jump or unlike atheists and skeptics, and they seem to like employing rhetorical tactics, and they're very good at it. I'm not. I don't even know how to do it if I wanted to. But there is a point. So number one, the commenter makes fun of my use of the word gotcha. So I got a lot of heat from this. I hear you. This is not, this is just my way of saying, okay, I hear what you're saying, or okay, I understand what you're trying to say here. I don't agree with, doesn't necessarily mean I agree or don't agree with it or something like that. But the gotcha thing, that was something I was trying to use as a tactic in that case, but not as a tactic to win a debate or to have a bad faith dialogue or something, or to like bias the, I was just using it. I was remembering last time, when I was on T-Jump show, the first time I would say, well, yes, as again, just my way of saying, hey, I hear what you're trying to say here. I disagree because of this, or I agree because of this, or something like that. So that's all I was trying to do with this word gotcha that I kept using in the show. And the reason I changed it to gotcha is because, well, when I said, well, yes, the first time, I got feedback, people saying, well, it sounds like you're agreeing with what T-Jump's saying. No, that's not what I'm intending to say. So I thought gotcha would be better. So I kind of trained myself to say gotcha as in I understand what you're saying, but I had the same problem there. People were making fun of it, and also people are thinking that this is me kind of agreeing with what T-Jump is saying when it, I think it's personally absolute nonsense, or I totally disagree or something like that. So fine, I will work on the words. I'll try to say I understand or something like that. But here's the part where they call me dishonest. So apparently I was moving on from point to point. And this is true. And this was deliberate on my part. Why? Well, because of you Fundy-Lay skeptics from T-Jump's channel. So I remember the first time I was on T-Jump's show, I was a guest on T-Jump's show, and that means I have to follow his lead. The topic of properly basic beliefs came up, and we spent like an hour and a half just on that one issue, hammering home to the point where I thought we were saying the same things over and over again. Even at one point, I tried to move on because I thought, okay, we're not getting anywhere. So, okay, well, it's your show. You do what you want, but we should probably move on. People are getting bored of this. And what are you Fundy-Lay skeptics, you fans of T-Jump, do you biased fools? Okay, sorry about that. Answer seriously. What do you guys do? You blame me, the guest, who has no control over the format, who tried to move on for your benefit, but I had to follow T-Jump. It's T-Jump's show. I'm following his lead. He specifically said, no, I want to keep talking about this. It was his fault, not mine. You don't blame him, and you blame me, the innocent one, who did nothing wrong and was just following what T-Jump wanted to talk about. He wanted to spend an hour and a half on properly based beliefs, how they work and what they are. You blame him, not me. Get that straight. Now, the second time around, I tried to learn from that because I knew that you guys biasedly blame me, undeservedly, instead of T-Jump, for laboring on a single point over and over again without making any progress. So this time around, I did try to learn from that and say, okay, great, we can go back and forth a little bit, but if I perceive that we're just not getting anywhere, I wanted to make sure I brought up other new points and that the convo was progressing and the dialogue was kind of progressing and multiple points could be brought up rather than just belaboring a single point for a long time, especially since this show was only scheduled to be an hour long as opposed to the 4 hours or 3 hours that I had with T-Jump on his show. So this was me trying to be kind and take into consideration you, Mr. Dutch Boy, you, Mr. Robert Saget, you, Mr. Pissteak. How dare you blame me and call me dishonest because I was taking into consideration you guys and trying to progress the conversation. Shame on you. Shame. You should be ashamed of yourselves for daring to blame an innocent one like me who is trying to do the right thing. It's outside of the frustration or whatever, just responding seriously, look, I was trying to do what I thought would be best for the conversation, given the format, and what I honestly thought you guys would appreciate, like bringing up more points, the better, rather than belaboring upon a single point where we keep going back and forth saying the same things and no progress would be likely to be made in terms of my convincing T-Jump and or vice versa, T-Jump convincing me. So I don't know. Yeah, you guys didn't like that, but you also didn't like in the first show belaboring on a single point. I don't know how to fix that. I guess I just won't care because no matter what I do, you guys will biasedly blame me and let T-Jump off the hook and say, great job, T-Jump. and then blame me for everything. So I'm sick and tired of your bias. I'm not going to bother trying to accommodate you guys. I'm just whatever happens in a show, I will do. yeah, so that's it. Those are the bad, that's my response to the bad eggs. But again, as my final word, it's not all bad. T-Jumps have got a lot of fans that I've interacted with that have come to my channel and interacted with me on my comment boards. And I greatly appreciate you guys, because you guys have, again, you don't always agree with me. I don't think I convinced a single one of you, to be honest. But, you know, you're respectful. You say, hey, here's my question. What do you think of this? And I'll try my best to give a great answer. I'll try my best to find a source where I elaborate on it on details or something like that. And, you know, you guys are always grateful for that and interested. And I, you know, I'm grateful for that, that you guys will take the time to care about seriously and engage seriously with what I think and why, and or even scan over some of the sources that I give you guys. And I respect your opinions. If at the end of the day, you just think like, look, I tried to give you an honest shot, but I don't think you did a good job, or I don't think you, your argument worked or something. Look, I disagree with you, but I respect that that's your honest take. If you're having a good faith discussion or dialogue with me, and really we're both trying our best to say what we think is true and why and try to arrive at the truth, that's what I do this podcast for. That's what I care about. That's why I even bother going on T-Jumps. I don't go on for the trolls and the people that aren't actually interested in truth, and they're just biased fools that can be simply dismissed as such. I care about the good faith interlocutors. And thankfully, you know, T-Jump is one of those people. He wants to interact. Again, I don't, he's got rhetorical skills that I don't, so I'm sort of at a disadvantage on that, but nonetheless, I think that there can be a good faith dialogue, and that's why I agree to go on the show with people like him, or other people in his audience I agree to dialogue with, like Heather or Sutra Stevens, or, you know, many of the other, there were several of you that, I had a great talk with. So yeah, don't let my focusing for fun on the bad eggs, misrepresent that there are also several good eggs on that channel. So yeah, thank you for listening, and have a great week. Next week I will be doing the Theo Geeks podcast with David Russell, and that will be on Genesis chapter 2. So take care, everybody. Bye-bye.